Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, America's business lifestyle coach, and I am here, first of all, to wish you a happy new year. This is our first show of the year, and I am so excited to be here with you today to empower you to break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. Today's show is sponsored by the Indie Beauty Network. Visit indiebeauty.com to enjoy our free weekly newsletter and learn how you can take advantage of benefits like affordable product liability insurance to protect your business. Be an indie, not an outie. Visit indiebeauty.com today. That's I-N-D-I-E, beauty.com. You know, last week I watched some of the coverage of the funeral of former President Ford. And during one segment, the anchor covering the event was talking about what a great man Ford was. And he mentioned how nice he was and how much he loved to play golf and how much he enjoyed his wife and children. And then the announcer said something I thought was very interesting. He said, and I'm almost pretty much quoting here, "You know, President Ford was not an ambitious man." And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, then just exactly how did he end up in the Oval Office? Don't know. That was a very interesting comment to me. He must have been ambitious about something. Anyway, the timing of the question was perfect, since today's show is an expert on the topic of ambition. Dr. Deborah Condren is a psychologist, a business and executive coach, and a career advisor, and she's the founder and executive director of the Women's Business Alliance, an organization that has served as a motivational think tank for 2,500 women for over 8 years. She received a U.S. Small Business Administration Women in Business Advocate of the Year Award in 2000, and today she lives in New York City and San Francisco with her husband, son, and stepson. Her new book, Ambitious, and we're going to be talking about that spelling, is hot off the presses from Random House. In it, Dr. Condren addresses the issue of how we view ambition and what can be done, particularly by women, to reclaim ambition as a virtue. Do join us, 800-773-0355. Welcome to the show, Dr. Condren.
Thank you, Donna Maria, and call me Deborah. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm really excited to have you. You know, I'm on holiday with my family, you know, chasing toddlers around the house, and I caught this little bit of the funeral, and I thought, this announcer saying that Gerald Ford was not ambitious, almost as though if he had been, there would have been something terrible about saying that at his funeral. Would something like that surprise you?
Well, let me just back up and say, interestingly enough, I was in Rancho Mirage the night that President Ford passed away. Obviously, he's been referred to as the accidental president, meaning he didn't aspire, per se, to being president. So I think that's maybe the sentiment that this journalist was referring to, is he wasn't ambitious. We can leapfrog to too many women who are high-achieving, who are success-oriented, but in a certain sense, if we scratch the surface, if we women scratch the surface, we see that we are sort of accidentally ambitious, meaning we're not as successful as we can be, or we feel something's not right. We're stuck. We're not moving ahead. We're not getting the fulfillment or the money we feel we should be earning. So we are successful to, on the one hand, but we are reluctant to say we're ambitious. Why? Because ambition is a dirty word.
Well, so, and that's my next question. Why is that?
It's ambition is a dirty word for women. So with the late President Ford saying he wasn't ambitious, I think was a little bit of selling him short. Let's put it that way.
You know, and I agree with that, because before he came to the White House, he was an accomplished businessman.
He
served the country. He was apparently a fabulous football player, award-winning football player, and you have to aspire to that.
Absolutely.
So
the journalist saying President Ford wasn't ambitious was a put-down. However, if we flipped it, and that same journalist had been speaking about a woman, she would have been criticized for being too ambitious. So,
yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yes.
So let's talk about that. In your experience, I know your book goes into some detail about this, and you've worked with so many women, and your background as a psychologist would certainly shed some light on this. Why is it that ambition is a dirty word for women?
Well, think about it. If you are a listener, look in the mirror and look yourself in the eye and say, I am success-oriented. I value success. And then think about how does that feel. It probably makes you feel, a little bit warm, proud of yourself. You feel good about your accomplishments. It just feels like a value that we women are comfortable with, saying, I am successful. I value success. But now look in the mirror, if you're listening, look in the mirror or try this later, and say, I am ambitious. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of makes women cringe to say that. They can't quite put their finger on why that is, but there's something about the word ambitious, or ambition, that we feel is a dirty word. And it's not simply a game of semantics. Women that I've interviewed, and there have been 500, and I've worked with 2,500 women through my work as founder and executive director of the Women's Business Alliance, we're comfortable calling ourselves successful, but women prefer synonyms to ambitious or ambition. They say, well, I prefer, work with purpose or work with meaning, or I prefer aspiring to the word ambitious. And these are it's true even for very accomplished women who are leaders in their industry. And why is that? It's because they feel that if they are seen as ambitious, that the culture will regard them as bitchy or a bad mother, a bad friend, a bad spouse. So for women in our culture, ambitious is synonymous with being a bitch.
Can you be purposefully ambitious then? I get around it. I mean, this just really fascinates me. I sometimes think, I've heard people say the word ambitious in kind of a snotty or a derogatory kind of way. But the term itself, I mean, I talk with women all the time, and as you say, this is just a really fascinating thing. What did you find when you asked women why it was that they, felt that way? I mean, did they say it was because of the way our culture, the way we as women are raised? Did they say because they didn't want to, feel like they were one-upping the man in their lives? I mean, what, when you scratch the surface and go below, I just don't like the way it sounds. What did you find?
First of all, women are not fully conscious of our feeling. We're not conscious of how we really feel about our ambition. That's why this book is different. Before giving, I have a bulk of the book has practical advice and strategies for making, earning your worth, getting the money that you should be being paid, getting more power, more recognition, getting the credit you deserve, and doing it all with integrity and treating people ethically and as with decency. But before, I found that before women could really embrace tactics that I know work, I had to back up and help them scratch the surface of how they really feel about their own ambition. So if in my workshops, for example, at top MBA conferences, MBA school conferences, if I put up on the board definitions of ambitious, for example, 4 definitions, I'll just give you a few. An earnest desire for some type of achievement or distinction as power, honor, fame, or wealth, usually in a chosen field, and the willingness to strive for its attainment. That sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Another definition, the object, state, or result desired or sought after. Here's another definition of ambition. Desire for work or activity, energy, interest, passion in professional activity. And here's another definition of ambitious is aspiring, enterprising, and wishing to rise mentally or spiritually to a higher level or plane, or to attain some end beyond ordinary expectations. one more, requiring exceptional effort, ability, etc. Now, the final definition out of the seven that I show women is aggressive, self-centered. Now, which of those definitions do you think the majority of women that I've presented to and interviewed pick to describe an ambitious woman?
Mm-hmm.
It's the the aggressive, self-centered. So it's almost
right.
like the word should be ambition.
Mm-hmm.
So women, when they look at that more closely, they are afraid that they are going to be seen as greedy, that saying they're ambitious is somehow dirty, it's somehow dilutes the purity of their endeavors. So they said, they say, I value, you know, I want to make a contribution, I want my work to have purpose, and they feel that somehow they can't admit to being as ambitious as they want to be without risking compromising those values. And that's,
does this result in women sort of settling for less than their full potential?
They do. And that's an interesting question. The other distraction that women we end up chasing, a cultural distraction, the life balance, the work-life balance myth. And what that is it tells us that the real goal is we have to have, you know, the holy grail for a working woman is to have, you know, a very good work balance and a very good life balance. And it's presented in the media as something that we should be able to get right. And so what that means, practically speaking, if we're chasing work-life balance, is settling for less at work and less at home. So we're dumbing down both of those priorities. What I'm saying is, it's possible. The real way to have a great life is to value your ambition every bit as much as you value other priorities that you hold very dear to your heart, including your children, your spouse, your friends, your community contribution, and being as using the talents that you were born with and making the contribution you were born to make. That's what makes you the very best person you can be.
Right. And, I mean, I think that since ambition is typically used in, well, you know, a business achievement, you know, career type of context, I mean, I consider myself to be an ambitious mom in the sense that I have high goals and aspirations and would, you know, pretty much scratch anybody's eyes out if they,
yes,
you know, stood in the way of any of my children. So, I mean, that's kind of the way I've always thought of it. And it's so interesting, when I heard about your book, I just immediately said, you know, this is somebody who studied this issue and can really give us some insight. The listeners to this show, the lifestyle CEOs that we have here, they are business owners, small business owners, many of them also women, and a lot of them mothers, and they struggle with the kinds of issues that you're talking about. In terms of this book title, Deborah, I just have to say, how much time was spent going back and forth about the title, a lot or a little? I mean, it's interesting to have that word. I mean, you know, people have strong reactions to that word. So I'm just curious about, you know, the editorial staff and other people having conversations about whether you should, like, put it in all caps on the front page the way it is there.
When my editor and I came up with it, I was using, again, the word, one of the women I interviewed said, well, the word might as well be ambition. Mm-hmm. And my editor, we were brainstorming, and she said, how about ambitious? Mm-hmm. And I thought a minute, and I said, I love it. Because if you look at the cover also, that I did add a reading line above it that says, let's reclaim ambition as a virtue.
Yeah.
And so this is really, I think the editorial board embraced it immediately because it's especially both the women and the men get it, that what I'm conveying is, you know, we are reclaiming the word ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
The society tells us that we are a bitch if we are ambitious. So I'm saying, wouldn't it be great to be a woman who could go out and charge more and not feel that she's ripping off her clients. And
yeah, that's That's such a good succinct way of putting what so many people think about. We're going to go to our first break and come back and talk about that issue with Dr. Deborah Condren, author of the newly released book, Ambitious. Join us 800-773-0355 with your question or comment. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Everyone, welcome back to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and we are here today with Dr. Deborah Condren, psychologist and author of the new book, Ambitious. And the ambition of that book is to reclaim ambition as a virtue. And before we took our first break, we were talking about how women feel about being labeled as ambition and also how women feel about doing such things as, oh, starting a business, charging a fee for their products and services, and earning a profit. And, Deborah, you were saying that this kind of thought of charging and making money and generating a profit kind of causes some women to feel a little bit nervous instead of, you know, energized and excited. Tell us about that.
It causes many women to feel nervous or unworthy or afraid that they're going to lose a bid or a client or a job. Here's a great story, and this is what initially got me thinking about doing systematic research for this book. I was chairing a meeting of the Women's Business Alliance years ago, and one of the women in attendance who was a CEO of a leading biotech and pharmaceutical company told this story to the women at the meeting. She said that she had hired two research scientists, contract freelancers, one male, one female. The female consultant submitted her bill, and when she handed it in, she asked, "I hope it's all right that I charged my $90 per hour fee," to which the CEO replied, "Of course." The CEO at my meeting then said the male consultant turned in a bill for exactly the same type of work. They had identical credentials, and he stated, "My fee is $175 per hour," to which the CEO replied, "Of course." So this is a theme I've seen over and over again, women undercutting themselves. We can certainly talk about the glass ceiling, we can talk about barriers, but that's not the focus of this book. The focus of this book is, what are we doing to ourselves? Are we pricing ourselves too low? Are we not negotiating first salaries and subsequent salaries?
Yeah, if someone came in, I mean, think about it. You're a business owner, and someone walks in and says, "I hope it's okay that I charged, you know, $75 an hour." I mean, you're a business person. I mean, it crossed my mind immediately to say, "Well, no, it's not okay. You should have charged $50."
Exactly.
I mean, that's a really ambitious thing to say, but it just makes, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. It's like, why would it not be okay?
Yes.
For you to charge your rate? And that's a really good story. So it's so interesting. What you're describing is not looking at society or any outside factors for the situation we may find ourselves in, but looking inside us.
Yes. Another woman I spoke with, who is actually a journalist for a major business magazine, told me that someone had called her and wanted some sort of free editing advice. And she said to me, you know, I feel guilty saying no to her. And I asked her, well, why do you feel guilty saying no when she's asking you to do free work rather than thinking that she should be feeling badly about asking you to do free work for her? And she said, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Really?
Yeah. You know, we feel guilty, another theme is women don't feel, we feel that we're somehow almost a fraud, or we're going to be found out, or we don't know as much as our colleagues know, even if we have credentials to die for.
Mm-hmm.
Women also don't necessarily know what the market will bear. So getting a lot of information about what your competitors are charging, checking with your informal board of advisors, which I give advice about how to form, so that you can do your due diligence, find out what the market will bear, and then I tell women to charge in the upper 75th percentile of what the market will bear rather than the lower 25% or the very bottom. Even if you're starting out, and women especially who are starting up new businesses will lowball themselves. They say, oh, I'm just starting out, I don't have enough experience. Well, you have a skill set. You know that you can hustle and do the work and figure out a way to do it behind the scenes. So don't sell yourself short. If you start out charging in the low end, you're going to stay there. You're going to attract clients that are more difficult and that want to don't want to pay or that want to squeeze more work out of you. So when you charge in the higher end, you will enjoy your work more. You'll be paid what you're worth. You'll be able to afford great child care. You'll be able to buy a house, save for retirement and for discretionary expenses that you are in charge of.
Some of the things you're mentioning are like not even discretionary. I mean, child care.
Yes.
House. I mean, you're talking about basically eating.
Exactly. So why wouldn't you? I think that helps women justify charging more when they think about, okay, I'm doing this for myself, and I'm also doing this so that I can send my child to the very best school or after-school program or summer program, so that I can, women also need to invest in their own ongoing education and training, including high-level conferences. And often we sell ourselves short by not wanting to pony up the money to attend a conference that would increase our knowledge and sense of what's happening in the industry, which would shore up our confidence in charging more. So all of this, if we think about it and step back, it helps women to up their price. And by the way, I tell small business owners and consultants to raise their prices at least once a year, preferably twice a year. Doctors do it, attorneys do it. So the first of the year, maybe at the, then 6 months later, you should raise your prices. And it will also, cut out the kind of bottom feeders that are likely to be, your pain-in-the-neck clients, and allow you to be more pickier about the quality of clients that you're taking on and the quality of projects that you're taking on, so that in turn you're going to love your work more, you're going to get more meaning out of it, and you're going to be paid what you deserve.
Well, let's talk to Deborah about companies that sell products.
Yes.
Because that's another issue. This is a little bit different from the selling of services.
Yes.
You have product for product, you generally have a little bit less flexibility in terms
yes.
of what you charge sometimes. But let's put ourselves in the frame of mind of someone who's just starting out and they just are struggling. They understand what you're saying, love the concept, but their mindset, they just are struggling to kind of embrace that mindset. Reading your book is a great place to start, obviously, but they'll probably order it. But before they get to that, what help can we give someone who's listening now to kind of try and change their mindset so that as they're starting their business when it's in its formative stages, they can really wrap their hands around the concepts you're talking about and take it into their business instead of getting 5 or 6 years into it and then realizing, oh, gee, you know, not only do I have to kind of do this now, but imagine all the sales I've lost as a result of not doing it early on.
Yes. Before I answer, women can go to my website, ambitious.com, ambitchous.com, and order the book there as well as it's in bookstores. There are several concrete things women just starting out can do to not fall into this trap. Women, especially those who are starting out, think about how you are going to, your business plan and strategy for publicizing and marketing your products that you're offering through your company or small business. What I find is that women are reluctant to go ahead and just jump in and put themselves out there in the media, speaking to journalists, pitching themselves as an expert, especially when they start out. And even years and years into their business, they feel like everyone else is an expert but them. I tell women, go ahead and immediately hold yourself out as an expert. You can subscribe, for example, to ProfNet or through, if you're a small business, it's more cost-effective to subscribe to prleads.com, PRLEADS.com. Uh-huh. It's about $100 a month. And what you get for that is every day in your inbox, you will get between 20 and 50 journalist queries from reporters in print, newspaper, business publications, radio, television, that are looking for experts to quote on a variety of topics. So you can peruse that every day and quickly reply with tips and briefs. Journalists and reporters love those, with mm-hmm. three or four succinct points. And then say, if quotes are used, please cite Donna Maria, CEO of et cetera, with your credentials and contact information. So that's a way to build your credit platform, get your name out there. It boosts your confidence, seeing yourself, you know, quoted as an expert in the press. It establishes credibility. It brings you new clients. It's much more effective than paid advertising.
And it brings new opportunities, too, doesn't it? I mean, you're talking about sales and clients and stuff. But haven't you also found, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a great way to kind of change that mindset. When you have to write an email response that says, I'm an expert on that topic, or I manufacture these products in that particular business industry, here's what I think. I mean, how could you not automatically feel more empowered just by doing that, even if they don't use you? But what a great way to kind of establish in your own mind, gee, you know, I am pretty good at this.
Definitely. And here's what happens, though. So many women, so often, if I hand them on a silver platter a journalist query and say, this nails what you do. And women will say one of a few things. They'll get back to me about 3 days later and say, I've been so busy, I'm going to get around to this. But by then, journalists, it's the early bird gets the worm. Or women. Sorry?
I said they've written the story at best, and it's published already at worst.
Yes. Barbara Corcoran, who is, she's been called, she's a real estate magnate, and she is on The View and is a regular contributor to Good Morning America. She's a best-selling author. She started a small real estate company about 25 years ago in New York City as a young woman with $1,000 borrowed from an ex-boyfriend, and she sold it to Fendant a few years ago for a reported maybe $77 million. And she is just a PR creative genius. She says that it doesn't matter if she's in the dentist chair or in the middle of the grocery store, if her assistant calls her or a journalist calls her on her cell phone, she takes that call immediately. And she gets quoted very often because she knows that you really have to be aggressive and not wait. Women will tell me, I'm too busy, I just couldn't get around to it. That's another excuse I hear. Or just, I'm who do I think I am? I'm not really an expert. Why would they want to quote me? But another piece of advice I have there is, this is an exercise listeners can do. Sit down and update your resume or your CV, and put all of your accomplishments, add all of your accomplishments and wins and projects and dollar amounts, update it. And then step back and look objectively at that resume. And you know what happens? Women say, wow, is that me? You know, we forget about what we accomplish. We forget about the fact that if we were looking at another person's resume with our same credentials, we would be blown away. We would say, wow, that's an amazing, ambitious, accomplished, impressive person. But we forget, and we just need to go through, you know, a stepping back exercise to remind ourselves just how much of a body of work and knowledge and expertise we have built.
Right.
Another strategy is to form your own board of advisors. I mentioned that earlier. And that is, you can think of it as a brain exchange. You get, you reach out to people in with different areas of expertise that you can email or call periodically. You're not going to obviously waste their time. But once in a while, we all need feedback. And so when you do get an opportunity or when you do need to do some really quick due diligence, including doing research so that you can respond to journalists, it's good to pick up the phone or send an email and ask for help, ask for feedback. That's another technique women can use.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who is really good at what he does. This is actually a man. He's got a really great job. It just kind of doesn't really see himself as talented as he really is. And he was giving an old friend of his that he hadn't seen in years a ride home one day, and they were chatting, and the old friend asked him, you know, well, what are you up to now? And he started describing what he was doing, and the old friend looked at him and said, wow, man, you've really made a success out of yourself. And he kind of looked at him and went, oh, yeah, I guess I have.
And it's kind of the friend who didn't think, who thought he had not... Maybe.
Yeah, the friend who thought, you know, he just had a job and he was, you know, he was okay at it and, you know, yada, yada, yada. He described what he was doing, and the other person looked at him and said, wow, you know, you've really come a long way and made something out of yourself. And my friend was like, well, you know, I guess I have. That does sound pretty good. But he'd never really sort of associated that with himself. I guess, first of all, it's not just a woman issue, although I think we do struggle more with it, but a lot of people just struggle with that. And so the exercise you're talking about, putting yourself out there and letting an objective third party sort of mirror you, you know, if you're getting some good feedback, then, you know, it's the truth and you can go with it, right?
Yes. The other concrete strategy that you can start doing as soon as we get off this phone call, if you're listening, is I call it the Kaching file. K-A-C-H-I-N-G, exclamation point. Anytime you get an email from your boss or from a client, from a colleague, from a journalist that is complimentary, print it out immediately. Or if someone calls you on the phone and pays you a compliment, write it down immediately. I don't care if you've been up all night pulling an all-nighter. Go ahead and put it down while it's fresh. Print it out while it's there in front of you. And put it into a file that you name your Kaching file. And over time, whenever you're feeling down or doubtful, or just even if you're considering making a move to a different company, or if you are getting ready to bid on a proposal if you're a small business owner, it's a good thing to go back and review your Kaching file and all of your wins and accomplishments and feedback. You know, you can put your profit and loss statements in, checks, you know, that you get that are particularly exciting. Make a Xerox copy and put that in your Kaching file. And then you go back, and it's an instant way to boost your spirits and your awareness of, well, gee, I have accomplished quite a lot.
Right. I did all that.
You did all of that.
That's a really great suggestion, and with technology, it's really easy to save that sort of stuff. We're going to take a break. We're here with Deborah Condren, author of Ambitious. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Lifestyle CEO Show. I just want to take a moment to mention, if you haven't already been there yet, my new website launched today for Indie Beauty Network. It used to be the Handmade Beauty Network, and as of today, we are officially the Indie Beauty Network, celebrating independent manufacturers of products and independent providers of services of all kinds who join the Indie Beauty Network to share their passion with the world and, Dr. Condren would be happy to know, generate a profit. That's what we do. Check it out at indiebeauty.com. I also want to mention to you guys that we are not going to have a show next week. I am very excited about having been selected to go to Cape Town, South Africa with a group of women to talk to emerging women, girls, and emerging women leaders who are women and girls in South Africa, to share with them information and expertise and experience that I have to offer in the area of small business ownership. The organization that's sending me over there is vitalvoices.org. You can visit the website and check it out. I'm going to be posting pictures all next week. Deborah, before our last break, we were talking about some tips that you had to offer to help us sort of change our mindset to embrace our power and our ability to be successful. And I want to ask you, Deborah, you've got homes on both coasts, you're married with two sons, you're running a business, you've written a book, you're running around all over the place doing interviews with people like me.
Right.
How can you offer some tips for women who are doing so many things and loving it on how to sort of successfully integrate all that?
We women beat ourselves up. We think, she's getting it better than I am. He's getting it better than I am. I'm doing it wrong. We end up trying to twist ourselves into pretzels, trying to have a perfectly balanced life each and every moment of each and every day. That is a myth that the culture has created to distract women. It makes us chase our tails, put pressure, needless pressure on ourselves. So here's the truth that no one tells us, especially those glib work-life evangelists, is that once you get out into the world of work, and even before that in college, I've seen this with college women, that what you should expect is that your day-to-day life simply isn't going to flow smoothly. It's not always going to be balanced. And so you have
Is that okay?
That is okay. That's okay. The norm. Imbalance is normal. Balance is abnormal. Balance is bunk. And the paradox is, once we take that pressure off of ourselves to have a perfectly balanced work and home life, paradoxically, balance graces us once in a while. You know, at different times in your life, you're going to necessarily have to put more hours in at work. And then other times in your life, you're going to necessarily have to devote more time to your family or your education. And so successful women, ambitious women that I know who have made peace with their ambition and also, you know, love their families and other priorities every bit as much as they love their work, but they also love their work every bit as much as they love their other priorities. Those women look at the big picture. You know, so at the end of your life, you know, not even at the end of your life, but just, you know, look at the big picture. Life is a long time. You have a long time to get it right. Things balance out over the long term. Mm-hmm. You know, so think of yourself at the end of your life. So what if you're able to say, you know, I completely balanced my time between work and home. So what if you are a woman who has, you know, a burning fire in the gut to make a contribution in this world, and you sell yourself short, you dumb that down just so that you can have a quote-unquote balanced life, that's a tragedy for you and for the world, because you owe it to yourself to make the contribution you were born to make, and you owe it to the world to make the contribution you were born to make. That makes you a happier individual. It makes you a happier girlfriend, partner, spouse. It makes you a better mother. It makes you a better role model. And it makes you a better contributor in the business world.
I like that. Balance is bunk. We'll be looking for that book by Dr. Connie. Balance is bunk. That's a good one, because so many people do struggle with that. You know, I haven't, and I do as well, I have to admit. I sometimes, actually less now than I used to, you know, I haven't done the laundry, but I need to, you know, finish this chapter in a book or get this product made so I can sell it or whatever the case is. And used to feel guilty, you know, getting the business side done and leaving the laundry for the next day instead of going, you know, well, what's the most important thing for me to do right now? I'll do them both. But which one do I want to do now? Which one's going to have the best payoff right now? Which one's more fun right now? It's not a stagnant situation. It's dynamic. And I love what you said about sort of giving ourselves permission to realize that and just enjoy life.
Yes, enjoy your life. Enjoy your work. It's okay to love your work with a grand passion. You know, it's thrilling. It's inspiring. It makes us want to get up and bounce out of bed in the morning.
Right. And you know, so many people who don't love their work too. There was an article I read, I think it was the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, I can't think of which one, over the holidays, that was like taking a poll on how many people, you know, called in sick when they weren't really sick.
Yes.
Over the holidays because they hated their work.
Yes. And, you know, women small business owners who love their work say that work is play. Work feels like play. They love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to take vacations too, but it's, you know, work is really fun and it fires them up and it makes them feel, you know, that life is very meaningful and rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, hire people. Keep in mind that the worst run businesses or teams are those where when the CEO is out of the office or the team leader is out of the office, things fall apart. So if you have a built-in resistance, as many women do, to outsourcing someone to do your administrative assistant details, your house cleaning, your laundry, do the math. You know, write down a breakdown of how much you pull in per hour. And if you make, let's say, $60 an hour, and you could hire someone for $20 an hour to do some administrative things and get those off of your desk, it makes so much more sense, you know, in terms of a return on your investment to delegate and outsource and hire people. And that frees you up to do what you're great at and what you love to do.
It does, doesn't it? It's so funny you talk about that. My daughter we were driving down the street last week, and she looked at me and she said, you know, Mommy, you really love your work, don't you? And she said it in a really cool way, a really nice way. You know, she sits down at her little computer and she starts typing like me and she says, look, I'm working.
Now see what a great role model that is? And then we
get down on the floor and fold the laundry.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, there you go. Look, your chapters in your book, I want to share some of these with people because it really does break things down into bite-sized chunks. You've got what you call ambitious rules for people to use, and a couple of them just kind of really break it down. My favorite one is to stop the fraud police. You deserve to be here.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
I have found, and other researchers have found, that even the most highly accomplished women, truth be told, periodically have a sneaking suspicion that the bottom's going to fall out, they're going to be discovered by their colleagues as not really knowing what they're doing, or they feel a sense that they have they didn't really earn their credentials. It's very common. So, you know, it's that feeling like an imposter.
Mm-hmm.
And one very high-powered partner in a top New York law firm said that she feels, she feels very comfortable, on the one hand, being very aggressive for her clients, but then if she, you know, occasionally she's on a conference call and she finds herself thinking, oh, my God, they're going to find out I don't know what I'm doing. So, it's, you know, and she, her credentials are, couldn't be more impressive. And this is true of every leader in their fields. And whether you're 19 or 60, we periodically have that kind of sneaky suspicion that we just, you know, don't know what we're doing. So
yeah, we're gonna get, yeah.
Time to stop that. And there are ways that you can catch yourself, you know, feeling like a fraud. For example, do you preface every comment with, well, I don't know what I'm talking about probably, but here goes. Or, oh, I'm sorry, let me just add one thing. So taking an apologetic stance.
Instead of saying, oh, I missed something I need to tell you that's really important, and then say it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you've done a really great job of summarizing those kind of great tips in this book. And, you know, in a way that not a lot of people could, because you have worked with so many women and you bring that, that, you know, professional psychological training to this and really break everything down. I encourage everyone to check this book out, Ambitious, AmbitchousCHOUS.com is the website. Dr. Condren is the psychologist, author, and expert on the topic. You can meet her there, get free tips at her website there, purchase the book there, and learn all about the great things that she's doing. Dr. Condren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Donna Marie. It's been my pleasure.
Mine too, and have a great new year. You guys, I've got some great shows coming up for you over the next couple of weeks. As I said, next week, I will not have a show. I will be in South Africa, but I'm going to tell you all about that on the following show, January 29th, where the Kickstart Guy will be here to share all kinds of information about how to kickstart your business and take it to the next notch in 2007. This guy is one of Donald Trump's speakers at his Trump University. He's written a fantastic book. And you got to check it out. Join me on the show on January 29th when he will be here, the Kickstart Guy. I will be in South Africa next week. I'll see you on the 29th. In the meantime, get out there and break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. See you in 2 weeks.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.